This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 7th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 211. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. There's the Is It Just Me commentary. And the big deal feature. The NDP gave BC North America's top freedom of information and protection of privacy law back in 1993. But now it's 2021, and the NDP is clawing it back bit by bit. Guest Jason Waiwata of the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association explains why Bill 22 is harmful for democracy and must be stopped. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the NDP-controlled Royal British Columbia Museum in Victoria closing a gallery for the oddest of reasons? The forces of the woke have convinced the government that a museum about the history of a former British colony needs to be decolonized. Specifically, the third floor's Becoming BC Gallery, which management says is too European. It features a full-scale replica of Captain George Vancouver's HMCS Discovery and displays about the Gold Rush and a 19th-century old town. Make no mistake, a museum can and should evolve with the knowledge we gain about the history of the province. But it should always honestly tell the good, the bad, and the ugly of the history of the place and its people. Leave the third floor alone, but, for instance, let's see more about how Indian residential schools in BC ruined the lives of so many. A history museum should not become beholden to political and ideological fads. But if they're going to change exhibits, may I suggest some ideas? How about a Hall of Premiers? With recreations of Bill Van Der Zandt's Fantasy Gardens, Glenn Clark's deck, and Christy Clark's seat from a luxury jet. Or a history of gambling in BC, including the NDP's Nanaimo bingo scandal and the BC Liberals' casino money laundering scandal. Heck, you could even include the Vancouver Stock Exchange. Or the Transportation Tribulations Gallery, including the Fast Ferries, Vancouver's kiboshed downtown freeway, and Pat McGeer's proposed bridge between Vancouver and Victoria. Hey, I'd be the first to pay the $27 admission to see those. Maybe the museum's real problem is its location. It's right across the street from the Parliament buildings in Victoria. Government politicians who lost control of the coronavirus pandemic and the overdose crisis, well, they're desperate to find something that they can control. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. My guest this week on the big deal feature is Jason Waiwata, the executive director of the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association, also known as BCFIPA. BCFIPA has launched the Transparency Matters campaign to oppose the NDP government's Bill 22. Controversial amendments to BC's Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. BC once had one of North America's top FOI and privacy laws, thanks to the Mike Harcourt NDP government of the early 1990s. Now, under Premier John Horgan's NDP government, it is taking a big step backward. Jason Waiwata has built a broad coalition for the Transparency Matters campaign, including groups that often disagree with each other. Sierra Club BC and Wilderness Committee are among the environmental groups, and among the builders are the BC Construction Association and the Independent Contractors and Business Association. That says something about the value of freedom of information across the spectrum. You
know, that should say a lot right there.
Most definitely. And the key thing that we've tried to make sure that we brought into the public's attention was the fact that transparency matters to everyone. That this isn't just a matter for journalism and media, that access to information allows us in a democracy to make informed decisions, and that it's important for all of us to be able to gain access to information. In order to make those informed decisions at the ballot box and to trust the decisions that government is making. There's been a lot of business research, and in many respects, the business community is very interested in this because they understand the intersection between transparency and trust to their shareholders. And what government is failing to grasp is that as they've been seeing an erosion in trust It's because of a lack of transparency. And so what we've been trying to do is make sure that we're highlighting that transparency matters to everyone, and that as a result of that, we need this government to increase its transparency so that we can trust the decisions that they're making.
George Heyman, the NDP's environment minister, went to the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow last week, and the NDP said it would save more old-growth forests from logging. But how can British Columbians keep the government accountable for environmental protection after Bill 22?
The fees are just one of the elements that are problematic in this bill. Categorically, in every sense, this bill is trying to make it more difficult for people to gain access to information. They're adding new exclusions, and they're adding the fee. Those are the two biggest roadblocks that they're introducing in Bill 22. There's another interesting dynamic that was debated in the House committee on Wednesday and Thursday, and that is this discrepancy between what they're saying they're doing with DRIPA and the definitions they're using there and the definitions they're using in Bill 22. Because what that creates is the prospect that Indigenous peoples trying to exercise their legitimate authority and control over their lands and natural resources may indeed become the scapegoats for the government to deny access to information going forward. So when we look at issues like Ferret Creek, when we look at protests around LNG and the work that's taking place there and Site C, all of a sudden you start seeing the government being able to position Indigenous peoples as being the reason that they're not being transparent. And this is a real problem, in addition to the fact that they're also at the same time going to be charging Indigenous peoples to gain access to information in a nation-to-nation relationship. So it's hard to understand how the government is moving forward with this when they're dealing with those types of inherent contradictions, and they're either putting them in place inadvertently or they're doing it intentionally, and that's either way, it's problematic.
Law firms will pass on the cost of FOI fees to their clients, but right now it is a difficult time for the media industry in BC. Big and small newsrooms with tight budgets will be discouraged from investigative journalism by the FOI application fees.
That starts to add up. If it's going to be, as the minister had said, $25 a pop.
You know, it's interesting because this is one of the things that we've been looking at. It's disappointing to see the government piling onto the media another cost that they're going to have to pay in order to gain access to information when they're already having to deal in a new environment with the internet and all these other things. Part of the dynamic, though, that we're trying to make sure we bring home is that this impacts people at the local level, right? The Student Press Freedom Act campaign is one of the signatories to our coalition. There are local group of students that are filing FOI requests for their local school division, trying to find out how the division is making decisions that impact their local school as students in K-12. And what this act will enable is the government and that school division to put in place fees and create that barrier for those students to gain access to information. And the issue becomes that the government is able to unilaterally decide when they force someone into an FOI process. You can ask for information, and we've heard many reports of information that was available before that is now being forced into FOI. The government is using this as the excuse to try and say, well, we've had this explosion in FOI requests, when really they're just forcing more and more people to apply for FOI rather than releasing the information proactively. If this is information that could be made available to the public, it should be made available to the public by default. And putting in place these barriers is starting to impact more and more people at the local level across the province, at every government level, from the province to the municipality to the local school division to the local water board to your local library. You know, the province lists over 2,400 public bodies that are covered by the Freedom of Information and Privacy Protection Act. They're saying they're increasing that number by adding two. And what's disappointing is if you ask them for an accurate count of that number, they can't provide it. They don't actually have a complete list of all of the public bodies, nor do they have the ability to contact all of those public bodies. And so when they say they're expanding the act's coverage and they say they're doing that by adding two groups, that's not really being true to what the facts bear out. And this is partly the problem that we're running into, is that in 2017, the NDP made a whole bunch of commitments about increasing transparency. None of those are being carried out here. When they were in a minority government situation, they made a bunch of commitments to increase transparency, none of which are being carried out here. So what we're seeing is a bait and switch in this regard, where the government has made a commitment to do one thing, and now they're doing something entirely different. And it's disappointing to see, and we have to make sure that we increase public awareness of this. Because ultimately, they aren't just doing nothing. They're making things categorically worse. And that's the largest issue in terms of some of these things with this bill. You know, the system, as bad as it was, and as it was falling behind, was a problem. And the steps that they're taking are increasing the power distance from people to their government, and are increasing the friction that people will have to gain basic access to information from the government.
And not only access to information, but privacy is part of this bill. And there's one key area. It's called data residency. I wonder if you can explain that to listeners. So what data residency is and why this is a very important issue.
Under FIPA, there was a data residency provision that required the data to reside within Canada. And for the most part, that was maintained. The pandemic happens, a ministerial order is put in place, and it absolves the need for that to occur in FIPA. And so a bunch of public bodies, at least a few of them, decided that it was more important to move their data externally and start doing that. What that does is it places the data in other countries and other jurisdictions and subjects it to their laws. The minister maintains that this is something that other provinces have had for a long time, that BC is out of step with the rest of the nation, and that this isn't something that is part of a modern economy. She's only partially correct in this. Yes, other provinces do not have this protection in place. BC was leading the world in terms of having that protection in place. And it is one of the few jurisdictions to maintain that protection, because under modern trade agreements, you can't put it in place because it can be perceived as a trade barrier. That isn't the instance in BC. We have the protection in place. It's working just fine. And getting rid of it now means we will never get it back. The risk that we have in moving our data externally to the country, or external to the country, is, and this came up in a recent discussion with Citizen Lab and other researchers in the field, where there's a growing push to end-to-end encryption. So if we move our data into the United States, let's say, and they end-to-end encryption, we no longer have the ability to guarantee that it is indeed secured. Now, our contracts and other things may indeed guarantee that we will be notified, unless, of course, their laws prevent them from notifying us that they've changed that provision or they've granted somebody access. So what we're doing is we're creating this process, creating the very legitimate possibility that our data will be moved external to the country, that we will lose the ability to have and maintain total control over that data and information, and that can be a concern. The solution has always been end-to-end encryption, but again, the issue now is our allies are advocating, in some cases, to end that, and if that takes place, then we've lost the only safeguard that was there. So we have a current safeguard that is in place with data residency that we can maintain and protect our data here in BC and in Canada, that keeps it under our laws, under our protection. And we see this in the case of situations like LifeLabs. Data breach occurs, Canadians and British Columbians have legal recourse in Canadian courts against that company with that data breach. Now, if that data was in residence in the United States, that all of a sudden creates an additional legal hurdle, an additional barrier for them to gain compensation, and an additional ability or inability for us to take appropriate action. And that can, again, lead to greater complication and friction when we're trying to maintain control over our personal information, which is really important.
The BC legislature is not covered by the FOI law, and it won't be if Bill 22 passes. Almost a year ago, it suffered a ransomware attack. The Legislative Assembly Management Committee has kept the report on the attack secret. Another unique situation, Murray Rankin was part of the legal team that made the original law in 1993. He is now the NDP's Indigenous Relations Minister in a whipped caucus. When he was an MP in 2017, he told a House of Commons committee that fees are a tollgate that harms the public's right to know.
Trying not to vilify or create or other people in this whole conflict, but it is a difficult situation, I think, for any of the MLAs, and for any NDP member, frankly, who thought their government was going to be maintaining a stronger line and trying to increase transparency and accountability. Ultimately, the changes that this government is putting in place in Bill 22 will be the legislation that they are subject to when they go into opposition. And that's a very important element for them to keep in mind with this. So when they are creating these barriers and creating these types of structures that are not transparent, they are going to be subject and having to deal with that lack of transparency going forward. And their efforts now to erode democracy are what they're going to be bearing down the road. So it's disappointing to see. It's a difficult position for them to be in. And that's really why we keep going back to the central premise that there is a special committee in legislation that is meant to be reviewing this legislation on a regular basis. They are sitting currently. They are to be holding open and public consultations on this and making recommendations to the legislature. So the fact that they've introduced Bill 22, while that special committee is standing and is to be conducting its business, runs counter to the intent of what should be taking place, because it short circuits the work of the committee and it undermines the legitimate work of the legislature. So what we're hoping is that they will either be delayed to the point where they aren't able to pass the bill, and it dies on the order paper as it moves towards the spring, or that they withdraw the bill and let the special committee do its work and make its recommendations and then act on those recommendations next fall, which can include these proposed amendments from the minister.
What can people do to join the Transparency Matters campaign? How can they help to express their voice to the NDP government to stop Bill 22?
You know, the biggest thing is the government will only listen if they know that people are supportive of what we're putting forward and agree with the statements that we're making. They have the ability to send a message to the premier, to the minister, to their various MLAs on our website. They can go to fipa.bc.ca. Transparency Matters is right there. It's easy to find. We're available on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter on a pretty regular basis. And we can be found in any of those mediums. And the key thing is making sure that the minister, the premier, and the MLAs know that this is an issue that is concerning to people at the local level. Because ultimately, while there's truth in the fact that most media outlets are the ones that use FOI for general requests most frequently, the danger that we're running into as we move forward is that more and more the government is telling everyone to submit an FOI request because they don't want to release anything because they're scared of the potential political repercussions. And so as that risk of deferral to the FOI process increases, more and more people on the street level are having to use the FOI system on a recurring basis. And it is becoming more broadly known. That's where we come in terms of making sure that more people are aware of how to use the system and are able to move forward with it. But we're seeing more and more requests from average citizens because of the government pushing FOI to the local level more and more as well. So, you know, we're anybody that wants to get involved can come to our website and help send a letter, make their voices heard, and get that message into the government.
My guest was Jason Waiwata, the executive director of the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association. Go to fipa.bc.ca. That's fipa.bc.ca. And you can learn more about Bill 22 and how you can support the Transparency Matters campaign.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Kyoto news, Nintendo lowers Switch console sales outlook due to chip shortage. Nintendo President Shintaro Furukawa said the Japanese gaming giant cannot produce enough to meet the anticipated demand for the game console in the year-end shopping season. Nintendo lowered its sales forecast for its Switch game console to 24 million units, down 1.5 million units, through March 2022. In Taiwan news, creative scarecrow in southern Taiwan frightens more people than birds. A scarecrow featuring a mannequin head with permed and dyed hair that has been scaring residents of Chai County lately is actually a new tactic employed by farmers to keep birds at bay. Chai County Wild Birds Association Chair Chen Qianhua has applauded the method as it poses no harm to fowl. Farmers have tried all kinds of bird prevention strategies, from installing scarecrows and hanging reflective CDs and flags to even using poison or hanging up dead birds. In the Malaysia Star, large tire smuggling bust. Police thwarted an attempt to smuggle 727 tires worth about more than $208,000 via the Bangwan Sultan Iskandar Customs Immigration and Quarantine. Police noted that the Marine Police Region 2 have seized some $24.5 million worth of contraband items in the first 10 months of this year, most of which was cigarettes. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, who poisoned Joe Gilliam twice? For more than two decades, Joe Gilliam, 59, served as president of the Northwest Grocery Association, which counts Fred Meyer, Safeway, and Costco among its members. He represented their interests in Salem, battled competitors, and earned a reputation as a punishing opponent and loyal friend. But for the past 9 months, Gilliam has been lying in a vegetative state at an undisclosed care facility in Clark County, Washington. Two criminal investigations are pending into Gilliam's attempted murder. It is believed someone poisoned him with the toxic metal thallium. In the Seattle Times, Bruce Harrell has won the race for Seattle Mayor, defeating M. Lorena Gonzalez. Harrell had 62% of the votes in the mayoral contest. He'll be Seattle's 57th mayor, the city's first Asian American mayor, and its second black mayor. The 63-year-old former city council president starred on the University of Washington football team and worked as a lawyer before entering politics. He will replace current Mayor Jenny Durkin, who declined to run for re-election after a tumultuous 2020 that included the emergence of the COVID-19 pandemic, economic upheaval, the shutdown of the West Seattle Bridge, and mass demonstrations against racial injustice in the wake of George Floyd's murder. In Czech news, thousands of books from local children's publisher lost among Zim Kingston cargo. Orca Book Publishers says that 15,000 books were on board the vessel, and the publisher is waiting to learn if the books were destroyed in the fire, lost in the water, or are still on the vessel. The shipment included a new stock of several best-selling nonfiction titles for children, and it was being transported from the printer in China. The publisher said the shipment was among the last from its printer in China because it's moving production to Canada. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. When your peace is gone, you won't stand alone. We'll all stand together, because this is our home. And it don't matter what color you are, because love will conquer hate. So you won't stand alone. You won't stand alone. The Virtual Nanaimo Bar. Brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all those who are part of the effort to get British Columbians immunized against COVID-19 and the flu. It's BC Immunization Action Week. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 7th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 7th in 1940, the original Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapsed in a windstorm just 4 months after it was finished? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. And, lest we forget, November 11th is Remembrance Day. Wear a poppy, wear a mask, go to a ceremony to thank those who gave all. Until next week.